Hello everybody. Now we come to the chapter on in which we will discuss about how logistical performance can be measured. Many concepts that we have already read so far consist of the theory and practice of how logistics works, but the success of the function, the success of the total supply chain function will depend a lot on how effectively the team is working, how effectively it is delivering. So it becomes very important to have operational, financial and social performance metrics, KPIs, numbers which will actually say that when somebody says that they are doing a good job, if they are delivering material on time, if they are ensuring customer satisfaction, it is actually happening that way. So that's something that we will discuss in the next 20 odd slides in the 13th chapter of our study on logistics and distribution management. Now, measurement system objectives. The objectives of logistical performance measurement systems include monitoring, controlling, and directing. These are the three main objectives of the measurement systems of logistics performance. So, we are saying we need to monitor, control, and direct the operations, and then finally see how the deliverables are shaping up as against the norms. Now, when we say monitoring measures, these measures are used to track historical performance for reporting to management or customers. So, we are saying out of the 100 shipments that I delivered in a particular month, 95 reached the customers on time. Can be just one metric. So, you can say a 95% fulfillment. So, is that monitoring? Is that a monitoring measure? Yes. How it fits against the target, that depends from company to company, how they have benchmarked their processes. Controlling measures. It tracks ongoing performance and is used to refine a logistics process in order to bring it to a compliance when it exceeds control standards. So, let's take the earlier example. You have a 95% achievable. You have achieved in 1 month a 85% benchmark as against your minimum 95% goal. Then the controlling measures will try to understand why this happened and how it can be brought back into that bandwidth, into that the spectrum in which it should ideally the metric, the number should lie. And thirdly, the directing measures. These measures are developed to encourage performance by employees. So, directing measures are basically a hierarchical system in which you have one manager, you have a team, that manager and the team will report to another particular supervisor. So, there are certain directives, there are certain policy statements, there are certain wish lists which comes as a top down. So, they will fall under the directing measures. This is more on the at the supervisory level. Based on assessment done using these measures, good performance is rewarded. So, today we talk about the balanced scorecard. Many of you would have heard this is a term that is used in many functions including HR, sales, etc. The balanced scorecard of a company basically integrates all kinds of targets. You have the financial targets, business targets, the learning and growth targets, customer targets, and which all revolve around the strategy and the culture of the organization. So, it's important to have a balanced scorecard which will give you a correct picture. You might be, otherwise if you look at each of these targets independently, there is a chance that it might get skewed in the sense one metric, the business process metric, perhaps is doing very well. You are achieving your sales, etc. But is the customer happy? Are you meeting your targeted bottom lines? So, for example, is the COGS under control, etc. So, all these things can be found out when you have a balanced scorecard. Now, the balanced scorecard as a framework was first developed by Kaplan and Norton. As a structure, balanced scorecard methodology breaks broad goals down successfully into vision, strategies, tactical activities and individual metrics. A balanced scorecard incorporates measures from four different perspectives: the financial perspective, the customer, the internal process perspective, and a learning and growth perspective. So these are the, as we saw in the diagram in the earlier slide, these are the various perspectives in which the balanced scorecard operates. Now, what is the financial perspective? This is primarily the most important target or goal, because finally at the end of the year, at the end of a quarter, is the financial numbers which the shareholders see, which the external world will judge you upon. So this component of the balanced scorecard looks at the projects from a financial perspective and discusses financial considerations. Now, equally important is the customer perspective. This area focuses on what must be done and what is most important from the customer's perspective to achieve the mission. Then the internal process perspective, this component focuses on what an organization must be doing well to meet the customer needs defined in the customer perspective. So this is finally the goal, like you need, if you need to hit your financial numbers, you need to treat your customers well. Now, in order to achieve your customer service policy or customer service goals, there needs to be well defined internal processes, and this internal processes need to be lubricated from time to time, it needs to be audited from time to time, and then finally we need to see if they are going in accordance to what the company's vision is. So this what the organization must be doing well to meet the customer needs defined in the customer perspective. So this basically will define or decide how this is going to be shaped. Now, these may be divided into a mission oriented process and support processes. So mission oriented is, this is what we need to do to achieve our customer goals, and in order to do that, what are the support we need, what should be the way the support functions should be designed and structured. Specific measures and benchmarks are then set to monitor their effectiveness. Fourthly, learning and growth perspective. This perspective focuses on how an organization is improving its ability to innovate, improve and learn in order to support success with critical operation and processes defined in the internal process perspective. Now, to talk a bit more on this, see, it basically stems from the fact that we know the only thing that is constant in this world, and it is also true for the corporate world, is change. So anything which is static will lead to stagnation, it will lead to a certain amount of boredom creeping into the organization, certain amount of ineffectiveness. So learning and growth go hand in hand with the culture and strategy of the organization. So you need to have a good training team, you need to have continuous training programs which are relevant to the employees in order to make them deliver better. And it is not only important to have such training programs, these programs need to be reviewed upon, need to be looked upon as to how the employee is benefiting from these programs. So if you do this well, then finally your internal processes will be lubricated and you will give a better attention, and finally your customers will be happy. And this is something which all organizations which are doing well today are doing. There are many organizations we have seen who were leaders on a certain date. Let's take for example Nokia. It was at one time a leader in the world market. In India it was the predominant leader, but with certain amount of competition coming in from other companies like Samsung and Apple, etc., its market share diminished. Then finally another company like Microsoft, for example, took over Nokia. So I am not saying that they did not have good processes, they might have had, but somebody was better than them. So it's important to continuously review what you have to keep on improving. Continuous improvement should become a corporate philosophy. Now, the perspective of measurement. Now, all this is fine. How do you actually measure this? These two types of measures developed are activity based and process based. Activity based measures measure performance at an individual activity level. So one particular transaction, one particular, let's say, a goal as to what is the rejection percentage of my particular production line, how many batches were in compliance as per quality norms in the first time, how many were not and you had to again do something to better them, change them, bring them back into the specification or they had to be rejected. So, that can be one individual metric, an individual activity level. It indicates the efficiency and effectiveness of the first level efforts in the process of customer satisfaction. Process-based performance measures measure effectiveness and efficiency of customer satisfaction process. They examine the total performance cycle time or total service quality. So, when you are looking at a process, you are looking at a more than one individual function. You are looking at a process whole which might be made out of 5 or 10 individual activities. Now, what is the internal and external perspective on measuring? Broadly, there are 2 levels of performance measures, namely internal and external. The firm must strike a balance between the external measures such as customer satisfaction and the internal measures such as productivity, customer service, cost, quality and asset management. Now, the functional perspective can be the following: cost, customer service, quality, productivity and asset management. Now, what are the operating cost measures? Logistical cost is a measure used to measure logistical performance, which indicates the resource spent to meet specific operating objectives. So, logistics will always be budget determined. You will always have a budget which will say that your cost should not exceed this many percentage of sales, for example. So, you need to continuously monitor your transportation cost, your warehousing cost, your logistics cost, the transportation cost broken up into primary, secondary, etcetera. So, it helps to identify whether and where to make operational changes to control expenses and to discover areas of improved asset management. So, controlling expenses becomes very, very important in all areas related to supply chain, because that's how you are impacting the bottom line of the company. The customer service measures, it indicates a firm's ability to meet customer expectations. To achieve this end, many industry players are collaborating with their key customers and vendors to improve their processes and systems and provide better service quality, reduce costs and improve visibility. Now, what are the productivity measures? These measures give an indication of resource utilization. Productivity measures are static, dynamic and surrogate. Now, this is more to do with the operational, say the unit, for example, the plant or the factory. What is the utilization of a particular packing line I have, a particular filling line I have? So, you are breaking down your plant into various resources and seeing that the capex, the capital investment on that resource, are you getting adequate return on it? You have budgeted for a particular amount of expense on that resource, a particular amount of output from that resource. What is the actual, what is the practical reality? That's how you are going to measure the productivity measures. Static measures take all factors of output and input into account, which is called the total productivity. As the measurement is across only one span of time, it is called static productivity measure. Dynamic measures compares one static measure against another. Total productivity of one period is compared to static productivity of another time period. And surrogate measures take into account such factors not normally included in productivity calculations, but correlated with the concept. For example, units shipped per employee. So, it is not a directly comparable metric, because the employee does not directly affect how many units are shipped. How many units are shipped will depend on how many orders the customers have placed, but this is a kind of metric to get a ballpark idea as to how your productivity in certain varied concepts are shaping up. Asset management. Asset management is concerned with the utilization of the organization's mobile equipment, durable installed and stationary assets and current assets in the form of inventory. Facilities and equipment are also measured in terms of capacity utilization or the percentage of total capacity used. For example, if a warehouse has a capacity to ship out 10,000 cases a day, but ships out only 8,000, then you can say it's 80%. Another way of looking at it is that my warehouse has got 500 pallet positions. That's the maximum capacity of the warehouse. Throughout a particular month or year, how many pallet positions were used every day? Now, if this number is very low, like you have 500 and you are using 200 or 250 on a daily basis, then in the next review, you can look at whether you can reduce the size of your warehouse, because you are unnecessarily incurring a fixed expense in terms of rent, etc., every month, whereas you are not utilizing it completely. So, these are some of the metrics that can be used. Now, finally, the quality. A perfect order is treated as a concept for assessing the quality of logistics. Now, when we say quality management, the first thing that our mind goes into is the quality of the product. What is the output from a production plant and how is the quality of the product? But when we are speaking about quality from the perspective of logistics, we are meaning the quality of its services, and one of the ways in which it can be gauged or measured is looking at the perfect order percentage. Now, the features of a perfect order include complete delivery of all items requested, one-time delivery with a mutually acceptable tolerance limit. So, basically it says, as a customer, I have asked for 100 units to be delivered to me on the 10th of a particular month. Did the customer get 100 units on the 10th of the month as he requested without any problems in the quantity of the product, the quality of the product, or even the documentation of the product? So, that will make a perfect order. Complete and correct documentation, product faultlessly installed. If it's something which has to be installed by the company, then that can also become another added perimeter. Logistics quality refers to how efficiently customers' desires are met. Measurement of perfect orders as a customer accommodation metric. The Supply Chain Council defines a perfect order fulfillment as the percentage of orders meeting delivery performance with complete and accurate documentation and no delivery damage. As we said, 100 units on 10 July delivered on time in a perfect packed condition, product quality is good, installation is done as per the agreed norms, so everything is, so that's a perfect order executed. The first hierarchy relates the sales order to the actual shipment and ultimate receipt by the customer. The second hierarchy relates to the customer's request to the ultimate customer receipt, and the third hierarchy relates to the customer purchase order to the customer payment of the invoice. The hierarchies provide a robust way to define, measure, analyze the customer facing attribute of a delivery reliability. Complete logistics performance is a customer accommodation metric. The absolute approach provides a better indication of how a firm's logistical performance really impacts the customers. Policymakers need a better understanding of the level of logistics costs in absolute terms and relative to other costs. The main drivers of logistics costs, how costs and deficiencies in performance affect certain sectors of the economy. Now, we are saying that the complete logistics performance, how it affects a particular customer. So, it includes, you know, how the level of logistics cost in absolute terms refers to other costs in the picture, and customer satisfaction as a customer accommodation metric. Typical satisfaction measurement requires careful investigation of customer expectations, requirements, and perception of firm's performance related to all aspects of the logistics operations. Now, the external performance measures. External performance measurement information is required by two main groups of people. Shareholders and potential investors use this data to inform investment decision, to make informed investment decisions, and the primary source of this information is the company's published financial accounts. So, all your financial metrics like earning per share, etc., all these constitute the external measures. Now, a lot of activities in logistics actually affect these external financial metrics. Now, one of them is the cash to cash conversion cycle. The cash to cash cycle is the time required to convert a dollar spent on inventory into a dollar collected from sales revenue. So, cash conversion cycle is equal to accounts receivable turnover days plus inventory turnover days minus the accounts payable turnover days. Now, Supply chain will have, effect in the first one, accounts receivable, because the warehouse people can have direct discussions with the customer, ensure that payments are received by the warehouses on time for sales done by them. The inventory turnover, so a faster, better planning system in supply chain will ensure that inventory turnover is faster, so you will not produce things which are not required, etc. Although a lot will also depend upon the sales and how their forecast accuracy matched up against the actuals. And accounts payable turnover, this is more impacted by two groups of people, the procurement people, as to how they negotiate the credit terms with their vendors. So higher the credit term, so if you buy, when you buy products, if you pay your vendors in 90 days, for example, and if you, when you sell products, if you recover money from your customers in 60 days, then this 30 days is what you gain. So here also, logistics and supply chain has an important role to play. Cash to cash cycle should be as low as possible. So the faster that this cycle moves, the better it is financially for an organization. Inventory days of supply, it typically defines the total finished goods inventory at all plants, warehouses, etc., as expressed in calendar days of sales available based on recent sales activity. Now, this can be done in two ways. It can, many companies generally try to keep it internal, that is, they do not keep the inventory of wholesalers and retailers, they do not add it to the in-house inventory. So what this says is, you have 10 products, let us hypothetically take for sale, 10 FGs. Now at each FG level, at the end of a month, for example, at the end of October, on 31st October or 1st November, you have 70 units of that particular product as a closing stock. Your sales for November and December, let us say, is about 50. So in that case, you are holding more than 2 months of inventory. For example, if your closing is 70 and your next month's sale is 70, hypothetically, then your inventory days of supplies is 30, or you have only 1 month's coverage. So the lower this figure, the better it is for the organization, because you are keeping less inventory in the channel. The same activity can be done for all the products, and if it's wanted, this inventory might not only be the aggregation of all plants and warehouses. You can add the dealers and retailers' inventory also and see how many days' worth of inventory you have. Although from the sales number perspective, it is difficult to conjecture how much the secondary sales will happen every month. So if you have a sales forecast which is internal, the primary sale, and if you have the primary stock, then it is much easier to calculate the days of supply. Dwell time, it is the ratio of the days inventory which sits idle in the supply chain to the days it is being productively used or positioned. Extended dwell time reflects the potential magnitude of non-productive inventory. On shelf in stock percentage, on shelf availability is the measure of a product being available for sale to a shopper in the place he expects it and at the time he wants to buy. Increasing the on shelf in stock percentage benefits all members of the supply chain. So when you go to the supermarket and you look for products, the number of times you find the exact pack, the exact product on shelf, the better it is. If you do not find this product here and you see this product beside it is another brand, but you have also heard about that brand and it's equally good, your tendency would be to buy that. So for this company here, it's an opportunity lost. The total supply chain cost. The total supply chain cost is the aggregate of costs across all firms in the supply chain, not an individual organization. Grouping this cost helps to us to understand the source of these costs and how to measure them and how to optimize them to make the supply chain more efficient and cost effective. The supply chain response time, SCRT, it is a continuous measurement defined as the amount of time it takes for a supply chain to respond to an unplanned increase or decrease in demand without service or cost penalty. So this means that now today I have a particular plan to produce something, have something in my warehouse to supply to cater to the sales. Now, suddenly you have an upsurge from a particular market, a particular pack, which was not planned. Now, without incurring too much of a cost, that is without air freight, etc., how agile, how efficient, how flexible you are as an organization to respond to this sudden market demand and supply it to the market to capture sales and get the revenue for the company, that will define your SCRT or the supply chain response time. Customer perception measurement. Customer perception is measured by carrying out surveys sponsored by the organization interested in measurement or by the industry. Either the firm or consultant or delivery agents or industry organizations can carry out these surveys. Now we come to another very important concept, that's of benchmarking. To facilitate development, world-class organizations benchmark their metrics and processes to other organizations within their firm, industry, and throughout the logistics sector. So, you have competitors in a similar industry, you benchmark that my days on hand inventory is this many number of days. As per the most reliable information, my competitor A, B, and C have these inventory days. So, because there, although you might be competitors, the top 4 or top 5 global players or national players will have some amount of respect for one another. So, if they are doing something good, the other firm is also doing something good. So, if they are achieving a particular metric and if it is better than me, then it should be my desire to move up to that level and exceed that level and become the market leader. Such benchmarking not only compares absolute performance but also focuses on alternative methods to create process excellence. There are two initiatives to consider benchmarking. First, developing benchmarking roundtables to foster the collection and exchange of key metric and process data. The second initiative is a commitment to share measurement standards throughout the industry. Now, how does this benchmarking process actually work? The most simple form of benchmarking is to buy competitors' product or service. It's known as reverse engineering in design and manufacturing, where they strip down the competitors' product to examine the design, manufacturing methods, sources of component supply, and other relevant factors. Types of benchmarking: internal and competitive benchmarking. Internal benchmarking, this is where operations within one company are compared. Example, benchmarking of performance between country operations in multinational companies. So, you have operations in 100 countries across the world, you compare the best practices in some of the countries and have a brainstorming session where the country which is not following a practice can learn from the other affiliate. Competitive benchmarking, it involves going outside the company to direct competitors. Cooperative benchmarking compares one's own organization with other companies in different industries representing the best in class companies for particular aspects of selected business operations. Now, although the logistics of a pharma company, a chemical company, a food company, a garment company will be different, the basic core of logistics and supply chain operations remain the same. So, if somebody is doing something novel in transportation, for example, or warehousing, unless it is such that it is very, very product specific and cannot be emulated or copied into other industries, companies will always benchmark with each other, or they should always benchmark with each other also, even if they are in different segments of industries. Characteristics of an ideal measurement system. Firstly, cost service reconciliation. As cost and service are separated by time, cause and effect relationship between them is not established. An ideal measurement system should reconcile both of them. Dynamic knowledge-based reporting. The biggest challenge in logistical reporting is to present a dynamic rather than static picture of operational performance over an extended time period. Performance reports generally report for a particular period of time. They do not reveal current situation, extended past, or trend in the future. Thus, reporting systems should ideally possess diagnostic capacity to protect where operational trends are heading and to suggest appropriate corrective actions. exception-based reporting, an ideal reporting system will assist managers in isolating activities and processes requiring attention. Cost reduction and analysis. Now, finally, you know, in logistics, everything boils down to cost reduction, which I would like to say is more of an optimization than reduction, because if you blindly reduce costs, your quality of service might get significantly hampered, which you do not want in any case. Now, what is activity based costing? It assigns manufacturing overhead cost to products in a more logical manner than the traditional approach of simply allocating costs on the basis of machine hours. It first assigns cost to the activities that are the real cause of the overhead, then it identifies cost drivers that were not previously accounted for by the costing system. It has grown in importance in recent decades because the manufacturing overhead costs have increased significantly as a percentage of the total cost. The manufacturing overhead costs no longer correlate with the productive machine hours or direct labor hours. The diversity of products and the diversity of customers' demands have grown manifold. Some products are produced in large batches while the others are produced in small batches. The guiding criteria for effective logistical activity based on costing are relevancy and consistency. Other ways of activity-based management: what-if analysis, support customer cost reduction, internal benchmarking, gain knowledge on resource utilization, examine customer product profitability, and again internal benchmarking. So, you know, the way cost optimization is again another continuous improvement process which goes on and on. So, unless we do this, however good our logistical strategies might be, they will not stand the test of time. So, you need to continuously innovate and control, measure and relearn and unlearn your metrics. A metric which is important today is relevant today, might not be important tomorrow. Similarly, the metric might remain the same, but what you target to achieve in that metric will keep on increasing in this competitive world. So, if you had a 90% metric which was good 5 years ago, today your competition might force you to go to the 96, 97, you know, levels. And more importantly, if your actions in logistics management are not reactive, but they are proactive in terms of cost measurement, etc., you will be ahead of the game and not react and copy somebody who is doing a better job than yours. So, with this we come to this end of this chapter, which is on the measurement metrics. This is very, very important, because whether a system is agile, whether a system is efficient, can only be proven through numbers. Although the subjective customer response, the subjective customer satisfaction surveys, they are all important. At the end of the day, the numbers do play a very important role and becomes very, very important. Thank you.